When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, and thanks for downloading and subscribing. I am That Nerd Dad. This is That Nerd Dad Podcast, and we got a guest. Ooh, it's been a guestless show for a couple of weeks, but we are back. Today's guest is Mike LaCoulter of The Debate, CTV News, political journalist. Been doing it for 20 years. Something like that. He's been a journalist for like 20 years. I think he's been on the political beat for the last 10 or so. Good dude, really good dude, very generous with his time. And we're talking Canadian politics, but I assure you, we make it entertaining, as Mike always does. And this is That Chat. How about I throw to the theme song? It's not really a theme song, more to the intro. Let's throw the intro, shall we? Intro, please. Today, my guest is Mike LaCoulter of CTV News, The Debate. I've got a little image here. The Debate. I've been on his show. I thought it was time I bring him on mine. How you doing, Mike?
Hey, I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So you've been a political analyst for 20-something years now?
Political reporter for about 10 or going on 12 now. Okay. I came to Ottawa from Montreal as a senior political correspondent for another network that, yeah, we can name. Why not? I'm kidding. It was for Global News. I was with Global for over 20 years of my career. They gave me my start. Great times. And then, yeah, it was one of those things where in 2011, a job came up on Parliament Hill, and I was working in the local newsroom in Montreal, and they said it was one of those things where you want to join the big team, right? And national news is where it's at. And, you know, I had a sense of politics. Did I love politics? I'll be honest, not really at the time. And it was one of those things where I just sort of dove into it and realized that it is fascinating and it is interesting. And not for, you know, one particular reason, but the fact that there are so many behind the scenes stuff that people don't even know about that you try and sort of explain to people how, you know, laws come to be, but also how the laws affect people. And I think that's the most critical thing that sometimes we overlook. And as storytellers, we have to explain better. And it's never about what the law is. It's about how the law affects the ordinary person.
I think there's the message in there too, is how the law comes to be. Like, mm-hmm. We see it when it's nearly done. And I know there's a lot of discussion beforehand, but those, I mean, I hate to say the phrase backdoor deals, but the backroom deals are the fascinating part. And the fact that you joined in, you said 2011?
Yeah.
That was at the tail end of when politics was kind of normal. They're no longer normal.
Right? That's true.
Now it's so divisive. It's so you're red or you're blue or whatever. Like, you pick your color and that's it. And your affinity for that color goes beyond common sense. Have you seen that? How have you seen that change firsthand up close?
It's interesting. In the first couple of weeks on Parliament Hill, I honestly thought, and I hope people get the analogy, I thought that this was going to be like the sheepdog and the coyote on Looney Tunes, that they check in and they, you know, morning Ralph, morning Sam, and they clock in and they fight like crazy on Parliament Hill as the different parties. And then on the way out, morning, you know, have a good night, Sam. I'll see you tomorrow morning, Ralph. And it isn't that. They live and breathe it. So even in 2011, when it was the Harper government, there were, if you can imagine this, there's like a conservative bar, a liberal bar, and an NDP bar. And not that they don't overlap, but certainly, you know, the NDP bar was where all of the MPs and staffers and whatnot would gather. So if you wanted to sort of go hang out there and get some intel from them, or really sort of make some inroads there, you would do that. Rarely would you see a liberal set foot in that bar. Rarely would you see a conservative in that bar. But there has been in the past a little more sort of getting together and coming together of these different parties. It still happens, even though you see in question period these sort of, you know, rabid fights and the barbs that go across the aisle that are very, very cutting. They still have that type of respect on most occasions. But I think that, yeah, our political discourse right now is at a level that I think is incredibly unfortunate and also so partisan that I think we stop losing sight of the key here, which is essentially that these are laws that are for Canadians. One of the examples I think that was really, really good, I was during the Erin O'Toole leadership when they remarkably, and nobody thought this would have happened, that the Conservatives supported a bill on conversion therapy, and how the Liberals introduced this bill to ban conversion therapy. And everybody thought that within the Conservative caucus that there would be a lot of hand-wringing and a lot of discussion as to what they would do with it. And when they came out and unanimously supported it, basically green-lit it through Parliament, that was one of those moments when you say, wow, everybody finally put down their swords and got together and decided that this was for the greater good. It doesn't happen often enough. And I think that, you know, we have to get to a place. I always sort of look at any kind of big debate, any kind of big discussion as a pendulum that always swings, right? So sometimes it swings hard left, sometimes it swings hard right, and eventually it'll sort of settle in the middle. I'm hoping that we will eventually get there, but it's really difficult, you know, when you consider what you see online and what you see, how people really sort of entrench themselves in their politics and their policies, and you wonder whether or not we'll ever get to a place where everybody feels like they can actually sort of have those discussions, even in the open. And I say in the open because they still do take place in the back rooms. And it's interesting to talk to members of Parliament who say, oh yeah, I'm good friends with that person on Parliament Hill, you know, who's a Conservative. Famously, Megan Leslie of the NDP and Lisa Raitt of the Conservatives were you know, good friends, and they even would go to different parties on Parliament Hill that were, you know, the formal parties, like it was either the press gallery dinner, which is like our version of the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and there's also something called Politics in the Pen, which sort of salutes writers and that sort of thing, and they would go and do duets. They would actually sing together. So it was interesting and in how two sort of politicians and parties that would be completely opposite still to get together in the off hours and have that mutual respect.
Well, we used to be able to do that. And
yeah,
it was one of the, you know, rules about polite company. You don't talk about politics.
Yeah.
That's gone. Now, before you go in someone's house, you know which way they're leaning, so you need to know whether or not you need to fight them as soon as you enter their house.
And some of them, you know, if it depends on where you are in North America, they may have a flag out front that tells you exactly who they are and who they voted for, right? And it's interesting. I've had this conversation with friends and even, you know, other people in politics, and you sort of wonder what happened. And not in a negative way, but what happened that sort of started us all on this path towards where we are. And yeah, let's talk about, you know, maybe a little bit before, you know, US President Donald Trump, but certainly that era ushered in this new sort of, this new world of where it felt a little more divisive, and it felt like you could use the term fake news, with reckless abandon, unfortunately. And that, you know, I'll be honest, was personally offensive to me, because I don't think that that is something that anybody likes to be called. I mean, I've been in news my entire professional career. You know, I grew up wanting to be somebody who was on TV and somebody who was telling stories. And I say that because I originally wanted to be a sportscaster. Then you realize that's actually not as much fun when you start doing it, because the hockey players say all the same things all the time. So, but
get them next time, bud. Get them next
time. Exactly. But, you know, we had our backs up against the wall. We really gave it 110%. I mean, if I had a nickel for every time they said that. But what's interesting about it is we have gone into this world of political discourse where people can now feel like they are definitely entrenched, dug in on one side or the other. And there is a section of the population that felt ignored for a long time. And Donald Trump said to them, I see you, I hear you, you are my people, I am your president. And so as much as people may say, well, that's terrible, you know, these people need to go back into the, you know, the into the shadows from which they came, and people probably feel that way. However, those people were always there. And I say those people, not in a, you know, us, them. That section of the population was always there. They got a voice, and now they're using it. Well, I think we as a population now need to sit down and say, okay, where do we go from here? Because the conversation has started, it's not going to end, and I think we need to get our heads around the fact that we need to have the conversation. And I remember after President Trump you know, was defeated and Joe Biden came in, it's not as if anybody who was supporting Donald Trump went away. And I think the same thing, to, you know, give us the sort of the Canadian feel of it, when the convoy left Ottawa, and that was sort of a time when people thought, okay, we can sort of relax. There's 3 weeks of horns honking, a lot of frustration on the part of people who live in Ottawa, and a lot of tension. And I remember saying this to on CTV News Channel one time during a live hit, and I said, we now need to figure out where do we go from here. And I say that because the people who came to Ottawa raised issues, they felt strongly about it, and we can't ignore them, because we can't, you know, just cast them aside and say they aren't valid. They are valid concerns that we need to talk about. And maybe if we sit down and talk a bit more and have the conversation a bit more and tell people that they are seen and they are heard, maybe that gets us to a place where it isn't as divisive. And maybe everybody will start to put down their swords and go, okay, I think we can talk about this. And that is the thing that I so desperately hope for this country. And this is, I'm not a politician, I'm never going into politics, but I sit back and I go, we have an opportunity now to talk about our politics and to really figure out where are we going. And I think we need to seize on that opportunity.
Two things jump out at me,
mm-hmm,
based upon what you just said. First, I think when I think of when this kind of fake news started, mm-hmm, I can remember Stephen Colbert when he used to do his like word of the day or whatever it was.
Right.
He did truthiness. And I think that was during the Bush administration. And yeah, that's when the word truth started to lose its meaning. And we stopped talking about facts as facts. We started, yeah, talking about facts as something that could be argued for, mm-hmm, or against, and where you land on your political spectrum is where how you viewed facts from that point onward.
Yeah.
So to me, that's the starting point. I could start to see the ball unravel, and the fact that it was mainstream enough for Stephen Colbert to talk about, yeah, it means it had started before then.
Mm-hmm.
The political machine had already started. Second thing, I want to, and I'm not, I don't want to put you in a bad spot, but I'm going to, I apologize.
Here we go.
Cause I'll be a little bit more, less neutral. I think one of the problems is all the village idiots. See, every village used to have a village idiot, and they were ostracized. They were kept, yeah, to themselves. And it was like, oh, ignore Joe. Joe's an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
The internet created a community where the village idiots could get together and talk. And now they've got their community. Now they have, yeah, a strong voice. And to your point, we can't just ignore them because it doesn't work. And you also can't shout facts at them because it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it did, I don't think some of the conversations we'd be having happen. So I'm with you that we have to have the discussion.
Yeah,
I don't know how we go from the extreme ends that we're on to somewhere in the middle. It's a long bridge.
I hear you. And see, this is, I tell this anecdote to people because I think it's actually fascinating and I enjoy it. So it was my first week here at CTV, believe it or not. I started in the middle of the convoy. I had been hired, moved over from Global. And then in my first week, the first day that I started at CTV on air, was the day that Prime Minister Justin Trudeau invoked the Emergencies Act. So it was a quiet day, obviously a real slow start to my career at CTV. But By the time Friday rolled around and police were in downtown Ottawa and starting to break things up and there were barricades and, you know, police lines, I was told Friday night, look, just before you go home, and it was sometime around 11 o'clock, can you head to the, you know, the line where police and protesters were facing off? And can you just go and make sure that nothing's happening before we sort of wrap it for the night, even though there was somebody who was sleeping at the office on an overnight shift? And I went out to the line and I went to talk to people. And it's funny because you approach, you're there with your camera person or your technician who's got a camera on their shoulder. And of course, instant recognition as fake news, boo, they're yelling at you. And it's a mob, right? And I say it's a mob in that it's a large number of people who feel the comfort of that large number of people in that community. And they're just shouting at you and yelling at you and telling you you're an idiot. Fair enough. I've had, you know, over 20 years in journalism. I've been called a lot worse. And it's interesting because we were just standing there close enough to police so that we felt safe enough, but also far enough away that we didn't look like we were siding with them. And that's something that you have to consider when you're out there as a journalist. And a couple of guys came by, and one of them that the camera person I was with had filmed earlier in the day, and he sort of struck up a conversation with him. So I struck up a conversation with the other guy. And I had the conversation with them. They looked like they were in, you know, those sort of bright, reflective, full winter suits. And it was like freezing cold, minus 30 in Ottawa. And not like one of those dry heat, dry colds that you get out in the prairies. This is damp. So we're, I'm just chatting with them. And when you chat with somebody one-on-one in a completely sort of disarming way, you get to know them a little bit. And I just said, so where are you from? And what are you doing here? And they said they're going to stay there forever, or, you know, for as long as they can. And I started unpacking what he thought and where he thought things were coming from. And he said, but you're, you know, as a member of the media, you're in bed with Trudeau, obviously. You just do whatever he tells you. And I said to him, I said, why do you think that? Oh, because I've seen your stuff. And I said, so do you know who I am? And not in that way of like, do you know who I am? I just said, do you know why? He's like,
respect on my name, sir.
Yeah. but this is the funny thing about it. You can't discount somebody on account of ignorance in the purest form. And ignorance, the definition of it is just not knowing. Right. It's not ignorance and willful, you know, I mean, there's willful ignorance, but it's not, I'm not at all saying that this person was stupid. Not at all. I can't blame you if you just don't know. So I said, have you seen my work? No. Okay. So how do you know whether or not I tell the truth? And then he said, because you all don't. I said, okay. And I wanted to know, I said, what makes you feel that way? At what point did you feel like we stopped telling the truth? And I forget when what he said, but and this is what I thought was fascinating. He actually hasn't watched network TV news, or as he would call it, mainstream TV news, in 10 years. And so I started to deconstruct that, and I said, wait a second. If you haven't watched TV news in 10 years, how do you know if I'm still telling the truth or not? Maybe I've changed. And he said, no, of course you haven't. And I said, but then you can't really say that. Because you don't know and you haven't seen my work, and I may be one of the only ones that you think does tell the truth. And so without a mob around him or without a group around him, he was unable to shout me down or whatever. So, but it was still a conversation. And he said that he listens to a podcast where this guy plays clips from different newscasts. And he criticized the mainstream media, which another phrase I don't like, but he criticized the mainstream media saying, we're selective, we don't tell the whole truth because we don't show the whole truth. So I asked him, well, that podcaster, how do you know that they show the whole truth? And he says, oh, that person wouldn't lie. And then I started to know, I went, okay, so he thinks that we in the media lie, but he's willing to believe this other person. What is this other person doing? What comfort is this other person giving this guy that I'm talking to here that other people in the media couldn't? And I think that there's a deeper conversation to have in that. And it was funny because we went through it and, you know, with logic, I said, look, if you haven't watched TV news in 10 years, then you don't know whether or not we're still telling the truth. And you don't know whether or not that guy's actually showing you the real clips or not, or distorting those clips. So I don't know that you really are getting all the information that you have. And that's sort of when you, you know, you try to sort of tell people, read as much news as you can. Because if you don't believe one and you don't believe the other, well, then there'll be overlap. And that in there is kind of the truth. But I thought it was interesting because I hope that that guy took away from that conversation that maybe I'm not such a bad guy. I wasn't judging him. And I was just having a conversation with him and asking him about his life. What brought him here? Tell me why you care so much about this. And I want to know, and that's what I was trying to find out from him, where in the grand scheme of things, if we want to say it in this way, where he got lost off the path or where he went off the path of, you know, getting your news from credible sources and believing in the institutions. And it's clear he lost faith in the institution of the government of Canada. And I wanted to know, where did that happen and why did that happen and what leads people there? Because I think that is a conversation we need to have. And that is something that is worth exploring. When did people stop believing in the faith in the, or having faith in our government as a credible institution, and can we get them back? And if we can't, well, then we got to figure something out. But we can't exclude these people from our society because they are our neighbors. They are the people that we go to the same grocery stores with them. We work out at the gym with them. They're beside us everywhere. And
let's not assume that all of us go to the gym, Mike.
I mean, I don't go often enough, but I think you know what I'm getting at. Is essentially like, and I'm not trying to get desperately serious on this, but I fear for the loss of a conversation. And, you know, allow me to plug my show. You know, I mean, the debate, hopefully, there it is, the debate with Mike LeCouture on CTV News Channel, weeknights at 6 o'clock Eastern. Anyways, I have started using the phrase at the end because you do that, you know, in a show, in a new show, you try and try different things. And I've said, keep the conversation going. And part of that is we're having a conversation on TV about different subjects. And it's not, you know, yes, it is a debate of competing ideas most times. But I think we need to keep these conversations going. Because if we're not having the conversations, then we get further entrenched in our two sides. And, you know, if you want to call them our two camps or just in our separate camps. And if we're not having the conversations and we're not getting to know each other and we're not understanding what makes the other person tick and maybe what led them to where they are.
I'll add this. For all of the, I'm trying to choose my, because I view you as being legit, I'm choosing my words more carefully.
Well, that's normally your first mistake.
I would just be like, for all the people who normally shit on mainstream media, but I'm like, I don't want to do that in front of Mike, but anyways, I'm going to do it.
No, do it. Hey, do it. I don't care. So, go ahead.
For all the people who shit on mainstream media, what I will say is, my experience, especially in the last few months, having been on your show, has been it carries a tremendous amount of weight in the public forum still. Now, what I mean by that is I've been at this podcast thing for like 3 years, give or take a little bit. I have never had so many family members suddenly engage with me as to when I said, I'm going to be on CTV News. It was like, oh, he's legit now. It added a huge amount of credibility.
Right.
And while maybe the younger generation right now hasn't fully come to terms with that, and maybe they are still seeking out their own preference for what media is going to look like, TV, mainstream media, still carries a tremendous amount of weight, I think, amongst the average population. And yes, podcasts have come a long way. Yes, YouTube has come a long way. But there is a, I'm blanking on the phrase, but like it's like a positive reinforcement bias when you're seeking out some of those things. Because you're not seeking things to challenge your existing preconceived notions. Whereas if you are watching a news channel, in theory, they're trying to give it to you straight for you to make your decision on your own rather than we know you lean left. So we're going to give you this piece of information.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I think that partly what happened during the pandemic is people were at home and seeking that validation for their own opinion and validation of how they see the world. And I think that, you know, that was shaken for a lot of people because then they started to do their own research on as a journalist.
Do their own research is such a scary phrase.
It is, but think about this for a second. I remember joking with an expert in vaccines, and I said to them, I said, I cannot wait for the day when I can talk about vaccines and not rank them. And I say not rank them because, you know, for people who would get their flu shot, did you ever say which one is this? Did you ever say, is this Pfizer, AstraZeneca, or Moderna? Never, never. And I would almost say the communications around vaccines was great, but it went too far. And I say that because people started to hold out. People started to say, well, I'm not going to get this one because I heard Pfizer's the gold standard. And is this one still good? And imagine from a public health perspective of trying to get everybody vaccinated, and then all of a sudden there's this abundance of research and information out there. And I understand a lot of people, you know, the establishment of health, the healthcare establishment essentially had never dealt with something like this, where you consider that there was enough information out there. They were trying to give people information in a world where they didn't know what the actual virus was, and trying to properly communicate it to people in a way that we could all understand, digest, and then, by the way, say, oh, in case you forgot from high school, science is the study of something to try to disprove something along the way until you think it's proven. And oh, by the way, that can change. And that's where masking went. Anyways, that's my side thing. But I think what happened with the pandemic was people had this sort of deluge of information, and they didn't know how to handle it either. And we in the media certainly didn't. I can't speak for everyone, but I know that there were times when I went, I can't believe I'm actually ranking vaccines here and telling people, oh, this one might be better over that one. And I think when you get back to the belief in news, media was in a very difficult position at that time. When we were taking the information that we were given and transmitting it as we always have, and, you know, looking at it with a critical lens and then telling people what it means to them, and that it in the, you know, quote unquote fog of war, we were going with what we had. So there were times, let's use Dr. Teresa Tam as an example. She was asked, would masks help near the beginning? And she said, we don't think so. And then all of a sudden, masks did help. And people thought, well, why did you lie to us about that? And nobody said, nobody asked the question, or nobody understood, because that's science. Because science is, we know something right now, and this is what we think right now.
We didn't wear seatbelts. Now we do wear seatbelts. Why did you lie to us, bastards?
Right? That's one of those things.
We used to smoke to relieve stress. Now we don't. And well, we thought doctor recommended. Some people still.
Yeah. Yeah. We have the information now that if you do this, that there's a negative cause to it. There's a negative outcome. And I think that is, you know, now that people have, because back then, let's say seatbelts, who had access to any of the safety reports to say what seatbelts, you know, actually do and whether or not they're safe for you? Nobody had access to that. It was a world where, you know, the news, you know, Walter Cronkite was the most trusted man in the world. You know, that was not taken for granted. That was taken for granted, I should say. That was, you know, set in stone. He was the most trusted guy in the world. And now that people can, there's so much online that people think that they can go search and get the, you know, the real information from. Even as a journalist, you're double checking, triple checking facts, and you think to yourself, is this the proper site that I should be looking at for this? And so I think people need to understand that, yeah, facts are still facts and you can't argue them, because that's what we have. And that, you know, let's get back to, you know, the question around the convoy. When it was on vaccine mandates and or lockdown rules, and the people in the convoy said, we want all the lockdowns, you know, taken away, and we want everything reopened. And the prime minister is sitting there going, that's Doug Ford in Ontario. And they went, no, this is you. You have to do it. And back to our, you know, how we started this conversation, civics. People didn't understand, and people maybe don't understand how governments work and how they should work. And I think that that's a problem. And to blame everything on the Prime Minister, you know what? That's a pastime that we all love. Of course we do. You know, it's always going to be the person at the top of government who's to blame. But when you don't realize that whose fault something really is, and you're still railing against them, I think that's a problem. And that education piece of, you know, we'll learn who is actually the person you should be petitioning, lobbying, or protesting against. Protesting is the best thing ever. I mean, I came from Quebec. It's a way of life there. And I say it's the best thing ever. It's your right. You Yep. should be able to assemble and peacefully state, you know, what you think is wrong and how you want to change it. It's not right to affect other people's daily lives and to, you know, hold a city hostage. So, and, you know, there's a court case going on now, whether or not that actually was the case. So, but I think the education piece of it is what we're still missing. And I'm hoping that schools can sort of lean into that and sort of go, this is how the world actually works. This is how government works, so that people are more educated when they are going and protesting or complaining about something.
I asked you for 30 minutes. We're at 30 minutes. Are you okay to go a little bit longer? Or?
Let's do it. Sure. Okay. I'm having fun.
Because you pivoted for me. I think you did that on purpose, and I appreciate it.
Maybe. I don't know.
I see what you did. Because when I initially reached out to you, I said, look, I'd love to, you know, I know you're a father of two, covering politics as long as you have. Obviously, I think this needs to be taught in school.
Yeah.
I don't remember anything from it, from my school years. Mm-hmm. When and how do you think we need to start talking about to our kids about, here's how government works.
Yeah.
And here's how important it is, because as more and more parents become polarized in their opinions, mm-hmm. that's going to be passed down to the next generation. And in order to combat that, we have to introduce new thoughts, new ideas, and better education. It's got to start somewhere. And my fear is that by the time you're 13 years old, you probably already know whether or not you're a red or blue or orange or green house.
Like, yeah. And it's interesting, right? Because kids are listening to your conversations as parents. And that's the one thing that I would almost say to any parent, be careful, be mindful. Because if you want your kid to sort of follow your political leanings, then go ahead and sort of fill their minds with whatever you want. Go ahead. But I'm kind of the belief, I say to my kids, like, vote the way you want, vote how you feel, but educate yourself. It's interesting that I forget if it was 19 or 21. We've had so many elections recently. But, you know, I'd go out on the campaign and I'd be gone for 40 days. And, you know, and this is a good time to publicly thank my ex-wife for never complaining about that. She knows my job and would say, yeah, don't worry about it, Mike. You go ahead, do your thing. And you know, we'll check in with you often enough, and you know, the kids are great too. But I think what was interesting is that, you know, even in 19, maybe even 21, you know, my kids would sort of have a little bit of class time where the teacher would talk about, oh, the federal election is going on, and they'd show different things of different leaders. And inevitably the kids, and it would seem that a number of them, you know, they would think that Jagmeet Singh was incredible. And because he has this energy, and it's interesting to see what kids pick up on, right? And to see what appeals to them without really knowing the policies, because they're not digging into policy. They're just sort of going on feel. And so I think when you ask me the question, when should they learn? I think it has to be in this sort of sweet spot of maybe, I'm going to throw numbers out there, but forgive me, 14 to 16. And I okay. say that because you can't vote just yet. And I don't think, like my son just turned 14. So I think we can have a conversation about politics and I can keep him interested longer than, you know, a game of Fortnite or whatever else. And I can sort of hold his attention that long on politics before he goes boring. But certainly my daughter, I think, I can have more of a conversation, as you know, she's about to turn 17 and she's a little more interested in that type of thing. But she took civics, and she took it as a summer course because everybody had told her that it's a boring course. And it's interesting. It's in Ontario, or at her school anyways, it was civics and careers. So it was split in one semester. So it wasn't, it doesn't even get its own semester. And that's one thing I'll say, that's a shame. Yes, you have to know how to make a CV, and yes, you have to know how to sort of direct your career. I would also say that financial literacy is another one, but I don't want to sort of, I don't want to become an education minister, so I won't go down that route. But yes, she would taught, she was taught about the different branches of government. So executive, legislative, judicial, and that's all important. But I don't know that they really, it was very surface. Because in preparing for this podcast, I sort of said to my daughter, I said, hey, get over here for a second. I, come on the couch, sit next to me. And, you know, tell me what you remember from your civics class. Because I remember helping her through some of the assignments when she would sort of say, oh, my God, government, what is that about? And I went, I kind of know. Like, yeah. What do you need to know here?
Pretty sure it says expert on my name.
Yeah. It's like I have a title, so I don't know if you need help or not. But anyway.
Do you know who I am?
Hi, I'm your father. Nice to meet you. I work on Parliament Hill. Anyways, but it was interesting in that what I now know in 10 years working on Parliament Hill, and I don't know everything, trust me, I just can't wait for somebody to snip that. Somebody will snip that part when I just leaned in and said, I don't know everything. And it'll be used
for you if you want.
Yeah,
you
no, I'm fine. I don't need that. I don't need that kind of hate. Anyway, so... it's, I think it's fascinating.
Your camera just flipped and you are upside down now, Mike.
Sort of fulsome, or it's fine. But it really is surface. And that is something that I think that, you know, my daughter was saying, like, that's an issue, Dad. And, she doesn't feel fully prepared. And I kind of, I'm waiting for that conversation in a year and a half or 2 years when she can vote and she'll go, oh yeah. What do I do? And will she base it on feel? Will she want to actually look into the policies and the minutiae of it? But certainly, I don't think she has a proper idea of how bills are formulated, proposed, how they go to committee, and then all the different readings, and then how it then has to work its way through the Senate before it gets royal assent and then is actually law. And it's fascinating that, yeah, I learned that. I didn't learn that in school. Like any kind of job, you learn it more on the job. But I think it's something that people need to understand, and especially considering, you know, people need to realize garbage collection, not Justin Trudeau's fault. You know, all of those types of things, not the Prime Minister's fault, not the Premier's fault. If it's, you know, near your home, likely you're, you know, the mayor, the municipality, that type of thing. And I think people need to understand that.
Mike, I love you. At some point in time in the last 3 minutes, your device tipped and you've been upside down for several minutes now. Literally, you're upside down. Your nameplate is fine, but I'm seeing your face something, is upside down and it's amazing.
Something happened. What's going on here?
It's fine. There you go. Now it's gone. I think he's still there though. Mike. Thank you so much for your. I'm going to share it. Here's how it here's what happened. He just went upside down on me. Anyways, thanks to Mike. We'll wrap the show up there. He was great. Hopefully he'll come back. Maybe I'll go back on his show. All right, so the show went a little off the rails at the end there when he went upside down. Whoopsie. Want to thank Mike for his time though, and his insights into Canadian politics and how we can get better. I like the fact that he hasn't lost hope, because I think I'm leaning towards hopeless, but Mike still has a lot of hope for us. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank you for watching. I want to thank you for downloading and subscribing. I want to thank you for hitting up my new Substack, where I'm spending all my time these days writing for you. Hit up my Substack, please. That's it. Be well. Be safe. We'll do it again next week.
Thanks for listening.
Damn. It is your favorite girl. That's right. It's the Allie Mars, the one and the only. Everyone else just ain't me. I am the host of Welcome to Mars, a lifestyle podcast where nothing is off the table. I have come a long way from sex and dating and have transformed the new vibe to all things lifestyle. We still talk sex, but I'm more interested in the journey, where people have come from, how they made it, and where they're going. Subscribe or follow to a brand new look and a brand new era. Welcome to Mars.
Subscribe or follow on Apple, Spotify, Google, or at theallymars.com.
Because even with the new look, I'm still that same bitch you love to hate.
Come on a journey like no other, where you will discover many roads that will lead you to a happier, healthier, and more stress-free life. And the beauty is, you don't need any vacation time for this adventure. The journey will come to you. Join Avery Rich on your very own journey into yoga. Along the way, she will demystify yoga poses and guide you into a yoga posture or short sequence, all in less than 15 minutes. You have nothing to lose but stress. The Journey into Yoga podcast. It's not for people who like yoga. It's for people who don't like yoga. Follow or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at averyrich.com.